Okay, so imagine then that these new texts that are very different in style have begun to emerge. I should probably say at this point, just to kind of fill out the picture, that actually this level of complexity and mythic narrative evolved over a long period of time, and there's a corpus of texts that are sometimes called proto-Mahayana scriptures that aren't quite as elaborate, that are somewhat more similar to the Nikaya Buddhist texts, but they show some features of the Mahayana text too. So they're kind of proto-Mahayana Buddhist texts. But anyway, over time, these texts emerge, and reading between the lines, reading some of these texts, it seems clear to me that they didn't necessarily have a universally warm welcome. A number of the texts include passages that talk about how terrible it would be if anybody refused to believe this text, or how terrible it would be if anybody insulted this text, or how terrible it would be if anybody insulted someone who upheld the value of this text. And that suggests to me that probably people did criticize and maybe call into question the value and legitimacy of these texts. Otherwise, why would it be there? Why would you need to state that anybody who doesn't appreciate your text, you know, will burn for 1,000 lifetimes or 1,000,000,000 lifetimes in some horrifying hell? So that's what I'd like to suggest was going on, that they weren't necessarily rapturously received. And it seems fairly clear that must have been the case, because there appears to be very little evidence, very little archaeological or textual evidence, to illustrate or to show that there were many people devoted to Mahayana Buddhism for a long, long time after these scriptures that I'm referring to were written. Even while the scriptures themselves were evolving, even while they were being transmitted to new cultural environments like Central Asia and China, even then, they were still seemingly not all that popular in the land of their birth, which was India. So it seems to me then, they needed to find a way, the writers of these scriptures, needed to find a way of underlining the fact that their scriptures were valuable, that their scriptures were worthwhile. Not only that, but actually that their scriptures represented some kind of higher teaching, some kind of more complete version of the Dharma than the Nikaya Buddhist scriptures. Because if they didn't, well, why bother with them? If the Nikaya Buddhist scriptures had everything that was needed, then what is the need for the Mahayana Buddhist scriptures? So another way of putting that would be to say that the Mahayana scriptures needed to justify themselves. They needed to show that they were legitimate. And there are various maneuvers, there are various moves that Mahayana Buddhist texts make in order to demonstrate their legitimacy. And I'm just going to look at some of those. In fact, I'm going to list a few briefly, and then I'm going to go into some of them in more detail. So first of all, the first thing that they did was that they presented themselves as originated from, as being communicated by the Buddha. So they came from the Buddha. This is how they present themselves. In a moment, I'll explain that it was a slightly different conception of the Buddha than the one found in Nikaya Buddhism. But they presented themselves as being authored by the Buddha. Secondly, they used the visionary imagery that I referred to a few moments ago as a rhetorical device, emphasizing what can be seen above what can be heard. So I was emphasizing how the early Buddhist scriptures were transmitted orally, and someone who was regarded as a good monk was someone who had heard much. They'd heard many scriptures. The emphasis was on what could be heard, because orally was the means by which wisdom was transmitted. In Mahayana Buddhism, wisdom is transmitted through image. I'll just come back to that in a moment. The third ground upon which Mahayana scriptures affirmed their legitimacy was through the teaching of skillful means. I'll come back to that later. And just a couple of other ones that I'm not actually going to explore so much today, but I'll just mention them now. Some of them claimed that they came from a higher source, the source of enlightenment itself, or the source of wisdom itself. They claimed that anyone who was possessed of perfect wisdom, what they said was the same as the Buddha, was equivalent to what the Buddha had said. And because this particular justification relates to the perfect wisdom tradition, I'll come back to that next week. Yeah, the other grounds really upon which Mahayana scriptures asserted their legitimacy was simply through saying it over and over, saying how great these scriptures were, how if anybody were to devote themselves to these scriptures, then all kinds of benefits would come to them. And I will say a bit about that at the end, actually. Okay, so just to go through one or two of these areas in a bit more detail then. First of all, the texts present themselves as teachings coming from the Buddha. But as I've spoken about in previous talks, in Mahayana Buddhism, the Buddha is no ordinary being, he is a trans-historical being. He stands outside of time, he stands outside of space, and he can manifest at all times and everywhere in many different forms, with many different names. So while we might read a Mahayana scripture and it may say the Buddha said so and so, it's not the Buddha of the early Buddhist scriptures, it's a super Buddha, it's an enlarged Buddha, a cosmic Buddha. This is most clearly brought out in a scripture called the Lotus Sutra, where I'll need to set the scene a little bit for this. So the Buddha is giving a teaching, the teaching of the Lotus Sutra. And just by the way, it never really emerges, it never really becomes clear what this teaching is. But there are many, many parables and stories along the way, but we never really find out what actually the teaching is that the Buddha is giving in the Lotus Sutra. But anyway, at one stage, the Buddha summons trillions and billions and however many you could think of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, and they all appear instantly, just in a moment, and they surround the Buddha. And everyone, particularly the ordinary monks, they're amazed by this. They really don't understand where they've come from or what they're doing or who they even are. And the Buddha says, all these beings, and it includes Buddhas as well, not just Bodhisattvas, all these Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, I've taught all these Buddhas and Bodhisattvas over countless lifetimes in countless universes. I've taught each one of them, and they're here now as my disciples. And a number of those present are really confused by this, because they believe that the Buddha just lived for 80 years and then he died. And so how could he have taught all these beings? How could he have taught all these beings in all these different universes? How is that possible? And so the Buddha explains that he's been awakened for a seemingly infinitely long time. And he has appeared in many different worlds over that infinite period of time to share his wisdom, to share his Dharma with all beings. Sometimes this figure that appears in the Lotus Sutra is referred to as the Eternal Buddha. I think in technical terms, he's not eternal, but he has been enlightened for as far back as you could possibly remember. So he may as well be eternal. So this is the kind of Buddha that we encounter in Mahayana Buddhist texts, a Buddha that has been awakened seemingly since time began. Yeah, and this Buddha can be encountered in many different ways. He may not just be encountered walking down the street or giving a teaching to some monks. He might appear in another way. He might appear in a dream or within visionary meditation. And in the context of that, he may give one of his teachings. In fact, it's been suggested by at least one scholar that the origins of Mahayana scriptures may well have been dreams, or may well have been elevated meditational states that then the meditator or the dreamer then wrote down as being a very, very valuable experience and then over time this consolidated and became more like the text that we can see today. So the Mahayana Buddha can be encountered in many different ways, including through the pages of a Mahayana Buddhist scripture. And I think I might come back to that later.